Back together with you, chatting it up Thursday, the 5th of June, 2025, on Connecticut Today. Wondering aloud if Governor Ned Lamont tipped his hand just hours earlier about running for a third term. Inside investigator, reporter Catherine Revelo dropped by to talk about allegations of some alleged political fundraising irregularities in Connecticut. Connecticut Independent Party Chairman Chip Beckett talked about the just-concluded legislative session in Hartford, and CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum dropped by to detail a U.S. Supreme Court ruling blocking Mexico's lawsuit against U.S. gun makers. And we get this from Governor Ned Lamont.
You had asked me a year ago, I would have said, I think the state's on a good trajectory. We've stabilized things. We're growing again. It's time to pass the mantle. But it's also an incredibly complicated time right now. Starting with all the uncertainty of Washington, the increased possibility of a recession. So maybe it's a time where experience makes a difference.
Oh, how about that, Governor, His Excellency, Governor Edward M. Lamont. How about that? Wait a minute now. Let's listen to this again. Now, the governor held a news conference with the Capitol Press Corps. I was not there. The governor held a news conference a little while ago, earlier today, with the Capitol Press Corps. And one of the questions was, I would have asked it too, hey, Governor, you're running again? You said you would let the Democratic Party know, your party know, the fine people of the sovereign state of Connecticut know at the end of the session. Well, the session's over, Governor. Are you running again?
If you had asked me a year ago, I would have said, I think the state's on a good trajectory. We've stabilized things. We're growing again. It's time to pass the mantle. But it's also an incredibly complicated time right now. Starting with all the uncertainty of Washington, the increased possibility of a recession. So maybe it's a time where experience makes a difference.
Maybe it's a time where experience makes a difference. Woo-hoo-hoo! Everybody go cool your jets. Susan Bicewitz, William Tong, Sean Scanlon, Luke Bronin, everybody calm the freak down. How are you? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, let's make no mistake. He didn't say technically he was running again. Didn't say that. In fact, I'll get to a longer portion of what he said, but also in the surrounding area of that bite, he said he had to, obviously talk with his wife, the First Lady of Connecticut, and said there's a lot of decisions to go on to happen and a lot of things he has to go on in his mind back and forth. But how about that? Was that just an announcement of him running again? I'm telling you, if you're a member of the Democratic Party, you should be thrilled. If, in fact, that was kind of a little hors d'oeuvre, a little appetizer of the governor running again, you don't want to hand it off right now to anybody else. You just don't. With all due respect to the lieutenant governor and to our esteemed Attorney General William Tong and to Sean Scanlon and to Luke Bronin and whomever may be eyeing the governor's mansion. I don't think you want to do that now. Now, I could be wrong. But you tell me. We'll start off with this. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. We'll start off with this. Shall we? On your Thursday, a lot going up. Very busy show today, as always. A simple question that I posted, facebook.com/voiceofct. Do you think Governor Ned Lamont's going to run for re-election? And should he run again? We've been talking about this, Miguel, because over the past, couple of weeks, especially now with the General Assembly finally putting stuff to bed, nothing really earth-shattering, a bunch of the wacky bills got set aside, thankfully. But did that just sound like the governor saying, I'm really close to running again? He didn't say he was running again. So let's put that right up front here now. He didn't actually say, I intend to run again. But he did start it out with, if you had asked me a year ago, no. if you're a Democrat, you should be thrilled with this. You should, because Ned Lamont, for whatever he is, he's not a leftist nut. He's a Democrat that can actually look at the leftist nuts in his party and say, no, I'm not going to raise your taxes. We're not going to go with $1 million tax and this tax and that tax and the other tax. And also, he was asked today, hey, Governor, are you still going to veto that bill that would give striking workers unemployment benefits? He said yes. He doesn't like it. Good for him. We'll bring you that as well. But we'll start off with this. And now, if he runs again, how does that affect the Republican side in this state? Everybody, well, Jen Tooker, Westport, she has already declared. I think Matt Corey declared for the lieutenant governor's spot, I think. He's run for a bunch of stuff previously. What does that do now? What does this, does what the governor said today not only affect his party, does it affect the Republican Party too? Listen, if you're, for example, the soon-to-be former mayor of New Britain, Aaron Stewart, has a lot of cross-party appeal, a Republican who got elected numerous times in a majority Democratic city, does Aaron Stewart and the likely Stewart campaign, she hasn't officially said she's running, she's trying to get the 300-and-something grand to get the public financing to run next year. But now, does she hear this and say, whoa, wait a minute here, maybe me versus Susan Bicewicz is a lot easier than me versus Ned Lamont? So we start with that today. Little bit, not quite an announcement that he's running again. But what does this sound like to you?
If you had asked me a year ago, I would have said, I think the state's on a good trajectory.
If you had asked me a year ago, I would have said no. Little appetizer there, Governor. A little on the basta before the main answer, huh? Folks, what do you think? Should the governor run again for re-election? I tell you, he wouldn't be the worst thing. He would be far better than anybody in the Democratic field. Trust me on this. I'm not saying Aaron Stewart shouldn't run. I'm not saying any other member of the General Assembly or any past or present day Republican should or should not run. But, boy, you take that into consideration and you go, So I'm looking at some of the early responses to our Facebook question today, facebook.com/voiceofct. And I put a pretty, straightforward question out there. I thought, do you think Governor Ned Lamont will run for election and should he run again? Now, again, I appreciate all the responses there. But one response was, and I want to get this right, no thanks, God no, I hope not. listen, and I'm not here running the Lamont reelection campaign, but let's face it, Connecticut's a deep blue state. The odds of electing a Republican governor here are not good. They're not. So as much as you may chastise Ned Lamont, you do realize he's the best you're going to get on the Democratic side. Do you understand this? You're not going to do better than him. You're not. I don't care whether it's Susan Bicewicz or William Tong or Sean Scanlon or Luke Bronin or however many, Eric Russell, who's ever been rumored for this. Trust me, all those people and more will make Ned Lamont look like Ronald Reagan. So you better hope he runs again, if for no other reason than have somebody quasi-normal. I'm not saying he's peaches and ice cream and your ideal governor here, but let's look at the alternatives. Governor William Tong, how does that sound to you? How does that sound? You like the ring of that? He'll be firing out a new lawsuit at the White House every day. Oh, my God. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Be careful what you wish for. Do I think there are a number of Republicans that would make a great governor of Connecticut? Of course I do. That's not the issue. The issue here is dealing with reality. And when I heard the governor a few minutes ago, and Chris will have this in his news, and we'll play it for you here another few times during the show, including what he said about the housing bill. Apparently, he still hasn't signed the housing bill. Hello? But, man, when I heard him say, well, you know, a year ago I would have said no, but now things are different, I'm sitting there literally going, thank God. Doesn't mean I'm going to vote for the guy. Doesn't mean I'm going to be putting a Ned Lamont bumper sticker. By the way, who uses bumper stickers still? Seriously. Doesn't mean I'm putting a Ned Lamont sticker on my vehicle. I never have. I don't want any vandalism on my cars. You know what I mean? But come on, people. I know you don't like Ned Lamont, but look, come on. You don't want any of the alternatives. Trust me on this. It doesn't mean you have to put a Lamont lawn sign on your little bungalow. But let's be in the clear-headed present mind. Okay? Todd and Shelton to kick us off. Hello, Todd. How are you, sir?
Hi, Mr. Pacelli. You're doing a phenomenal job.
Thank you, Todd. I always appreciate those kind words. Thank you, sir.
I wish Lamont all the luck in the world, but I'm going with Aaron Stewart 100%. Right. And the state is ready for change, sir.
Hey, listen, I like change, Todd. Every 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 100 years, we could use a little change. You know what I mean?
You know what the difference is between John Rowland and Ned Lamont?
What's that?
Roland got caught.
Well, I knew that was coming. All right, Todd, thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All right, Todd. Now, is there an inference there from our good friend Todd that Ned Lamont did something on tawdry? Now, here's one thing I would not advise the governor to do. If he wasn't going to run for office again, which sure sounds like he's going to, don't apply to be the Connecticut State tree logger. He probably shouldn't do that. Or the, I don't think there's a tree. Well, yeah, I take that back. I think there are state tree people. State arborists, is that it or not? So, and by the way, coming up in Chris's news throughout the day, a lot of other great bites from the governor. He talks about his standing tall. He is not going to sign that bill giving unemployment benefits to strikers. He said, no, I don't believe in that. So good for him on that. Good for him on that. He takes a few shots back at Republicans for their assertion that he's blowing up the fiscal guardrails and the spending cap. And he talked about a bunch of other things, including the housing bill, HB 5002, which apparently he still hasn't signed. But this is the soundbite that's making my phone blow up and everybody in Hartford going, aha.
You had asked me a year ago, I would have said, nope, I think the state's on a good trajectory. We've stabilized things. We're growing again. It's time to pass the mantle. But it's also an incredibly complicated time right now. Starting with all the uncertainty of Washington, the increased possibility of a recession. So maybe it's a time where experience makes a difference.
So is that is that the governor? Now, he doesn't actually say it, but do you hear that and hear him say, hey, why not 4 more years? We often have folks from the Inside Investigator site, which does great journalism here. Check it out, always, insideinvestigator.org. My friend Mark Fitch usually joins us, as well as we have a call coming in from Catherine Revelo, who's been on the show before. She has an interesting story that was posted a few days ago over the weekend, Acting Blue, Evidence of Fraudulent Political Donations Targeting Retirees. Catherine Revelo, the guest. Hey, Catherine, it's Paul here. Good to have you back. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm good. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it. So outline what's going on here. And this involves a gentleman who I had on a couple of years ago during the election cycle, Dominic Rapini. And I knew he was a tech guy. I knew he had a background in this prior to your story. But what are the allegations here? Lay this out.
So So the allegations, and this is also a story that has kind of come to the forefront of national politics recently, too, are that basically Axe Blue is being used by what are called straw donors, who are basically people who are spoofing somebody else's identity and making a donation in their name.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Rapini brought data to us that shows that this is potentially targeting people in Connecticut who are, you know, retired or who are not employed and who are elderly. He brought us a bunch of FEC data that he had analyzed, you know, that shows thousands, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars of donations that has been made in these individuals' names, along with affidavits from them that say that that does not reflect donations that they've made.
Okay, so he then was able to, or somebody did, they then, Catherine, went to these people and said, hey, is this you? And they've signed affidavits to say it's not. Is that what we understand here?
That's correct.
Interesting. So now the core of this is what? These people have no idea this is going on. So this is sort of, although it's not, I would say, obviously, identity theft per se, somebody is using their names, right? Their identities to siphon this money. Is that what the core of this is?
Yep, that's the core of it. And the concern is this is potentially, right, if you're not a citizen of this country, you're not allowed to make donations to political campaigns.
Mm.
So one of the concerns is potentially is that foreign actors are doing this and are not stealing people's identities, but are taking their names and information and making it appear as if those donations are coming from U.S. citizens when they're actually not.
And I know that, I guess, Dominic had presented you and you folks at the Inside Investigator with just raw numbers here that kind of back up his story, Catherine, of how odd this is, like something that doesn't look right, probably isn't.
Yeah, that's correct. So he provided us with some raw FEC data. I myself went in and looked at additional FEC data.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we did some analysis and found a number of anomalies that kind of lined up with what he said, which is essentially, you know, people who are either unemployed or who are retired and who are elderly. And there's, you know, sometimes thousands of donations being made in their name in a month or in a year, which is much, much higher than the rate that you would expect to see from the average American who's donating to political campaigns.
Does the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, which is what you're referring to, were there any red lights going off on their end of things? Was there anybody else, Catherine, or do we know or not whether this may have raised a red flag or not?
So as far as I know, the FEC hasn't opened an investigation into this. President Donald Trump has issued an executive order directing this to be looked into. We've also seen a number of other states that have opened investigations into this. So far, Connecticut has not done that, and we asked Attorney General William Tong if they had any intention to do that, but were essentially told that they wouldn't answer any questions about it.
Okay, that's interesting. So they didn't say, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Catherine, they didn't say no, but they just were mum on the case in and of itself. Did they know about it when you asked them about it or not?
I'm not sure. I know Dominic Rapini had forwarded his data to them. Essentially, what they told us is there's an ongoing consumer investigation into a separate case involving ActBlue and WinRed, which is the Republican counterpart,
sure. Yeah.
Which involves a totally separate issue that involves them automatically enrolling people in recurring donation programs, but is separate from this current issue.
And obviously, finally, Catherine, the fear is that this is, correct me if I'm wrong here, this is foreign money, outside the U.S. money, and I guess it's illegal for foreigners to donate to U.S. campaigns, right?
Yeah, correct. That is the concern.
All right. Catherine Revelo, folks, check it out. Check out her story at insideinvestigator.org. Acting Blue, evidence of fraudulent political donations targeting retirees. Catherine, good to have you back on. Thank you so much, and we'll chat down the road. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, appreciate it. The website is CT Independence with an S, plural, ctindependence.org. We speak of the Independent Party of Connecticut. Yeah, you know, there's the Republicans and the Democrats out there, and there's also the Working Families Party, the Green Party, other parties, and the Independent Party, which last I checked, they were claiming to be the right after the D's and the R's, the third biggest party in the state. Let's get an update on that. Chip Beckett, who chairs the party, a return visit with him. Hey, Chip, it's Paul here again. How are you, sir?
Great. How are you, Paul? Thanks for having me.
No problem, Chip. How's registered membership with the Independent Party now? Any updates on that? What's going on?
I haven't checked recently, but we were a little over 40,000 last fall. And
wow.
I think we'll be about there, and so that does put us as number three.
Yeah, I mean, 40,000, Chip, seriously, that's nothing to sneeze at. That is a recognized large group of voters here, Chip. And would you say that 40,000 or so are, what is your membership? Disenfranchised, angry, interested, fed up? Who is in the Independent Party?
Well, probably all of those, but I think the biggest part, and I think the part that's potentially growing the most, will be the disenfranchised.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to a lobbyist last night at the Capitol when I was up there seeing if a couple of our bills would go through.
Yeah.
And he said he'd left the Republican Party, but he can't be a Democrat. So I think there's Democrats that feel the same way, that they're tired of the far left policies, but they've got no place to go because we're trying to focus on a centrist agenda that addresses most issues for most people rather than a few issues for a few people.
You know, Chip,
what the two major parties have gone.
Yeah,
to.
And you know, Chip, it's sad because, you know, we're in kind of a home team versus away team here. Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Mets, you know, Ollie Frazier. We love a battle, yet you're trying to sell something with all good intentions to a lot of people who subsist just for the battle. I mean, they love the battle, and that's going to be tough to shake people away from, is it not?
I think it is, although if you look at not party registration, but unaffiliated registration, it's about 45% in the state, which says to me that a pox on both of your houses. And I think there's a lot of people that just, you know, they might like to watch the Yankees or the Red Sox root for one.
Yeah.
But I don't think they want to live their life according to which one wins the World Series every year.
Yeah, yeah. So, Chip, what were some of the bills, passed or not, yay or nay, up or down, that you folks in the Independent Party of Connecticut were watching, and what were you happy about, and what were you maybe disappointed about? Let's talk about those.
Sure. Well, there was a couple of bills about voting, one for ranked choice voting that had a fiscal note that didn't go anywhere. I'm very disappointed about that. You know, the fiscal note is, you know, fractions of a penny in the state budget. And I understand that's a problem, but if people don't believe in elections, you know, take the January 6th people, the people that are bored by it, or the people that think it was a walk in the park and no big deal. There's a lot of people that, you know, elections are how we decide who our government is.
Yeah.
Spending some money on it shouldn't be a major make or break enterprise in my mind. We had another bill that we had hoped to make it easier for people to be on the independent line, and that also didn't go through. We did come out for honoring the fiscal guardrails. I think they were bent to a large degree, but they stayed supposedly within the spending cap. So at least I think that's the primary one that so many of us voted for as a constitutional amendment. There were some components of the housing bill that we supported, but there's other parts that we didn't, and they made one giant bill that I think is they got their top-down approach done, but I don't think it's going to work for a lot of our towns, including down in Fairfield County.
Yeah, and that's frustrating, Chip. And the guest is Chip Beckett, the chair of the Independent Party of Connecticut. Check him out, ctindependence.org. Chip, that's the maddening thing that I always talk about on this show, these omnibus bills. And it's a trick, and you know this. Hey, hey, it's like the icing on the cake, right? We all love the top layer and the icing, but sometimes you have to drill down, and they hook you. I mean, you know, they try to hook people with, hey, this is great, and then you get to these huge bills, these huge multi-page bills, and a lot of people just don't have any idea what's in them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things is they have a philosophical thing that hedge funds and slumlords should build these big apartment complexes and deed, you know, affordable for 40 years. But I don't think, you know, then they've got project labor agreements in there. So project labor agreements drive up the cost.
Yep.
So they're not going to be cheaper. If they really wanted affordable housing, and affordable doesn't mean affordable. Affordable means government owned or government controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's unfortunate. But if they wanted affordable housing, then just say we want affordable housing. It's a dollar price. And let people build the three-family house. All the things that people did in the 20s or the 30s to get equity and build family capital, we've made illegal. Or, you know, you can't build a three-family or a duplex in most neighborhoods. But you also don't get to count it for the affordable housing component.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, so I think one of our big problems is aging and small family size. And they say only 20% of the affordable units can be studios or one bedroom.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're 89 years old and you just need a place to stay because you can't take care of your house anymore, why do you need a three-bedroom apartment? You know, you want to downsize to something smaller and easier.
Exactly.
And that movement would create a lot of space for families to go where one or two people are staying where it was built for five or six.
Precisely. And, Chip, you mentioned one of my favorite topics because I'm kind of in the middle of it. Some days I love it. Some days I hate it. Ranked choice voting. But the aspect you mentioned of is interesting. You know, a lot of people love to champion, Chip, ranked choice voting because I do see some of the things in it I like. But I find it kind of funny that, you know, some of the people in Hartford say, well, we could pass it and then we couldn't let any municipalities who want to use it, use it. I have an idea, Chip. Why don't we let the legislators in Hartford be exposed to ranked choice voting and let's do that statewide? You know what the answer is to that. That's never going to happen, Chip, because the last thing they want is more challengers in a race. And to me, that's the one thing that I laugh at. I really do.
Well, I think that was the heart of our minor party bill, because we wanted to, right now, a petitioning candidate to be recognized by any minor party has to do a second petition to be recognized by that party. They put up a lot of hurdles, and yes, it's the anti-competition league about how do we not have any competition, but say we represent the people.
Yeah.
And I would argue that our legislature does not represent the people. You know, it's been 80 years of one party rule, but it's Connecticut is 1% of the U.S. population, and it goes from very rural to very urban.
Yeah.
And we aren't anywhere in the middle of representing that. And I think that's too bad because we should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Chip, thank you. Chip Beckett chairs the Independent Party of Connecticut. Check him out. CT Independence with an S, ctindependence.org. Chip, good to chat with you. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. Chip Beckett there from the Independent Party of Connecticut. And yeah, you know, we talked about this on the show quite a bit over the past 2 weeks, not on the scale of today's topic. But, you know, we talked about the liability for countries and gun companies if somebody does something bad with their product that they had no control over, supposedly. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has taken that up on an international scale. And to give us his insight on that, we welcome back Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News legal analyst. Hey, Thane, good afternoon. How are you?
Great hearing your voice. Paul, sorry.
Thank you. No, it's okay. It's okay. No problem. No problem at all.
No, I just got off a call.
Believe me, Thane, I've been doing this for 42 years. I've done it all. Hey, this story here with the U.S. Supreme Court and Mexico and liability? And what do the courts say today? Break this down for my listeners here. What do we have?
So there is a federal statute that's 20 years old that was brought, that was passed because Congress wanted to protect the American firearms industry because there were all these lawsuits and civil suits by people that were victims of domestic shootings. And the idea was, well, you know, they're going to put this out of, they'll put them out of business. And there are Second Amendment rights. People have a Second Amendment right to own guns. And our guns are, all gun manufacturers are going out of business. So they protected gun manufacturers with very broad immunity from lawsuits, except one little exception. If you know that you're breaking someone's law and you are directly putting a dangerous item in the hands of someone who's going to use it, right, then there is an exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. And Mexico is saying, give me a break. We have these cartels.
Yeah.
They're using your guns, not our guns. They're using American, the kinds of weapons that the military uses.
Yeah.
We're spending billions trying to protect ourselves and you, by the way, from our gangs. And we need help. And you're responsible for this because you know you're making these guns for much more sophisticated people. They're not just Sunday hunters.
Sure.
And you also know that you've come up with a model, a system where you don't sell it to them directly, but you send it to a dealer. And then you know that the dealer sends it to an individual and that individual sells it to the cartels. And we know that you know that. And the Supreme Court basically said that today. You know what they said?
No, what?
We don't know. We don't know how you know that. they literally said, if I buy a baseball bat from Louisville Slugger, and I have the new Louisville Slugger has no idea that I don't have a Little League team that I'm going to use it for. They don't have any idea that I'm going to take it home and beat my cousin who says silly things all the time. And so they're saying, you know, our system is called proximate causation.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever that you've done, you have to be the proximate cause of what happened.
Got it.
And in this case, they're saying there is no way to prove that you could ever have had knowledge of proximity. So the court basically ruled 9-0.
Wow.
Right? That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
They said two things. They said, first of all, the statute is to protect the gun manufacturer, period.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the point.
Yeah.
You may not like it, but Congress created this law to protect these guys. And secondly, you have definitely not satisfied the causation element because we have no way that you can have known that the cartels are the ultimate users of your weapon.
Yeah. Hey, we didn't know my Uncle Joe doesn't play in a softball league when he
exactly.
You know, we don't know that. So, Thane, real quick, if I can get you one more here. So, our General Assembly just approved such a law here. I think our governor's going to sign it that would allow civil suits from people injured here in Connecticut by gun violence. So, might this, if somebody filed a lawsuit against this, and I assume the gun clubs in this state may do that, are they going to file that maybe on the same grounds here?
They probably will, but this case isn't helping them, right?
Yeah.
This only hurts them because the case was, remember, the case was because of domestic violence.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't because of – this is an interesting case. You're saying, wait a minute. If we're not protecting our local Connecticut citizens and letting them sue the gun manufacturers, why on earth would we let Mexico sue the gun manufacturers? Right? And so that's really what they're saying. These lawsuits began to protect the gun manufacturers from Americans who were victims of mass shootings.
Yeah.
And so this was just far too tenuous, and the Supreme Court wasn't going to go. And again, I don't know exactly what they're thinking of doing in Connecticut.
Oh, no, I understand that, yeah.
For the most part, the gun manufacturers have convinced Congress that they need special protection.
Sure. Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News, as always. Thane, much thanks. Have a great weekend. We appreciate
it. Great hearing your voice.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Thane. Thane Rosenbaum there. There you go. Nice, tight, bright, good legal analysis there.